DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I begin the show today a little bit disappointed in Georgia Tech, which I guess come to find out, I guess makes me a little bit like a Georgia Tech fan who's spent most of the last 40 years disappointed in Georgia Tech. But nonetheless, I am a little disappointed in the Yellow Jackets here today. I thought finally we were going to have a little fun here, and maybe the Jackets, beyond Brad Stewart, the wide receiver, who said whatever he said earlier in the week, that we're going to actually have somebody in this Tech rivalry or the on the Tech side kind of stir the pot a little bit, kind of get things going. I had been tipped off to the fact that Paul Johnson had said something interesting in his weekly press conference, I guess it was yesterday, that might get Georgia fans kind of stirred up. And while, you know, listen, I don't certainly like intentional trolling, I do think that Georgia Tech is one of those rivalries that at times could use a little of infusion of some kind of drama, some kind of passion, some kind of intensity. I don't know that the fever pitch runs quite as high for this one as it does for some of the other rivalries that involve SEC and ACC teams this time of year. I've always felt like it's the responsibility of the other guy, the underdog, the, for lack of a better phrase, the little brother, to turn up the heat on this thing. I thought that maybe Georgia Tech had done that, so I tuned in. I want to go find a copy of that Paul Johnson weekly press conference. Apparently, he said something that kind of, you know, maybe tweaked Georgia just a little bit. But I was disappointed with what I found. Here is Paul Johnson when he's asked a question about Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm from the Georgia Tech official side. Here's Paul Johnson.
I think he was a really good player a year ago, and you know, he's just more experienced. I think he probably feels more comfortable with what they're doing, but he's been a good player since he's been there.
So that's
to this question you mentioned.
Yeah, then the questions go on. That's Paul Johnson talking about Jake Fromm, and I was like, there's nothing there. There's nothing fun there. You know, I thought there was supposed to be more to that. Well, apparently maybe there was more to that answer than what you just heard on the video, because one of the longtime UGA reporters, Anthony Dasher, had a tweet of a little bit larger context of what Johnson had to say, and here's where things get a little bit fun. Johnson's asked about Jake Fromm, and he says he was a really good player a year ago and more experienced and comfortable with what they're doing. We heard that. He's a good player. But then what we did not hear, apparently, I don't know if it was edited out of the video or what, is that the other kid, Johnson says, is a good player too, and I can see why they have a quarterback controversy. Now, I got to tell you, listen, that to me in some respects is sort of a classic Paul Johnson line of, you know, Georgia's got a quarterback controversy, even though as of late, it certainly doesn't seem like there's been anything too controversial about what's happened with Georgia and its quarterbacks. Yes, after the LSU game, obviously, Jake Fromm didn't play particularly well. And we had a lot of folks here on a Dog Nation Daily who were saying, you know, maybe it's time to give Justin Fields a better look, give him more of a look. But a lot has changed in the meantime, and I think Georgia Tech's going to find this full well on Saturday when it takes on both Fromm and Fields in at least some form or fashion in this Georgia offense. There's nothing controversial about having two quarterbacks who are really good. And as Johnson said, Fromm's an experienced guy who's seemingly gotten better in his sophomore year, even than his very good freshman season of a year ago. And when Justin Fields comes in, he gives Georgia a bit of a different dynamic. But overall, at least based on UMass and based on what Fromm has done against Florida and Kentucky and Auburn, the results for the most part are the same. Two good quarterbacks who are capable of leading their team down the field. And listen, I think this is to a certain extent classic rivalry behavior for the one guy to say, oh, you know, Georgia's, they got a quarterback controversy. And, you know, I think rivalries need this. I don't actually mind Johnson saying that. If they're going to say it, I wish they'd stick by it as opposed to what appears to be maybe editing out of the video. But nonetheless, that's the deal there. Now, for what it's worth, Kirby Smart did talk about both Fromm and Fields on Saturday, because the game against UMass was one of those unique moments where we saw a lot of Fromm and a lot of Fields. And really, in that game, we saw a lot of Fields that we have not seen in terms of not just running the football, which we already knew that he could do, but he showed the world on Saturday that he's also capable of some beautiful deep passes. He really is the kind of player who brings the athletic specs that you would expect from a guy who was very, very close to being the nation's number one player a year ago. And as Kirby Smart said on Saturday, and as we have reiterated over and over again. There's nothing controversial about having two good quarterbacks. That's what Georgia has, and it's the Minutemen. That was what was on display. Here's Kirby.
Yeah, I thought both of them played well. I mean, I think that you have a run game that's as physical as ours, and you're able to kind of run the ball at will and run the ball inside, that it opens up the passing game and makes it easier. And thought both guys made good decisions with the ball. And man, I think Jake was 5 for 5 or something. And Justin probably didn't make a great decision on throwing the bubble out there. But other than that, he threw the ball really well. I mean, one of his drops should have been a touchdown.
Look, I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. I think both these guys played pretty well. I think both these guys are really good. I think if you look ahead to Georgia, not just the game against Georgia Tech this Saturday, obviously, yeah, the hope for dog fans is being a big favorite that you don't need a whole lot from either one of these two guys to win this game, that you can lean on the running game and maybe get out of there with an easy win. But when you start looking ahead to what's after that, at that point in time, a lot of Fromm, a little bit of Fields, and some combination of the two may be the way this thing needs to go. However, when it comes back to the original comments from Paul Johnson, you know, I think that Georgia Tech is a rivalry in a lot of ways that seems to almost be on life support. And it's not because Tech's not occasionally good enough to beat Georgia. We've seen that happen in 2014 and 2016. Just in recent years, Georgia Tech has won in Athens. Georgia's actually playing this week to end a losing streak to the Jackets in their home stadium. This is not about Tech as a team being incapable of occasionally winning a game. Upsets happen in college football all the time. But it's about two programs that are just moving in wildly different directions. Georgia, with the nation's number one recruiting class and a trip to the playoff last year, the reigning SEC champion, seems to be on very much an upward trajectory. Georgia Tech, if anything, is kind of a program beset by sideways energy. It's a couple wins, a couple losses. It's Paul Johnson on the hot seat. No, now Paul Johnson's the savior of the program, and kind of on and on it goes. Never in any forward direction, but just a lot of herky-jerky stuff towards the side. These are two programs that just don't seem to travel in the same stratosphere very much. If clean old-fashioned hate is a rivalry is going to matter, then somebody's going to talk about it like a rivalry. So if Paul Johnson wants to poke at Georgia and say Georgia's got a QB controversy, it may be a little irritating, but it may be exactly what this rivalry needs. I only wish that they're going to say those kinds of things that actually stand by them once they said. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hello to you. Thank you for being with us here on this day before Thanksgiving, no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Quick update on that. Obviously, tomorrow is Thanksgiving. We will not be on the radio tomorrow, nor will we have a live show tomorrow. We'll let you enjoy that with your family and friends. However, we will be back on Friday, though. All over the place. Radio, podcast, video, everything that you've come to expect on Friday. So we'll take a day off and allow our staff to also enjoy some time with their family and friends tomorrow. But we'll see you back here on Friday as normal for Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. That's in all the various forms. And by the way, speaking of Marco's, thanks to all of them for making all of this possible, because as they remind you, Primo is always on the menu at Marco's Pizza, with dough made fresh, sauce from the original Gianmarco family recipe, and three signature cheeses on every pizza. You can order yours today for Marcos.com, especially when you start thinking about that Black Friday stuff. And, you know, by that time, maybe you're turkeyed out. You're just looking for a chance to sort of sit around, watch a little football on TV, and you want something that's very different than the regular Thanksgiving fare. You've eaten all the leftovers. Marcos.com and saying hello, Primo, with that great offer. Two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each is certainly a great way to do that. We'll have Mike Griffith coming up on the program in just a couple of minutes. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here, presented on this Wednesday by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And as we head towards clean old-fashioned hate on Saturday, Georgia's kind of moving its preparations in two directions. First of all, trying to get ready for the triple option offense, as Kirby Smart has said over and over again, the kind of thing that Georgia doesn't see very much, that no one in college football at the major college level sees very much. Georgia's trying to get ready for that, but it's also trying to get a little healthier on the injury front. And this becomes a significant thing to think about as we head towards not just the regular season finale on Saturday, but then everything to come after that, including the SEC championship game. So let me do my part to give you an update on some of what Kirby Smart has talked about on injuries here, and we'll also talk with Mike Griffith about this a little bit later on, too. First of all, on a couple of those offensive linemen, Kendall Baker, Cade Mays, who I thought would be fine after only getting, what, the stinger in the Kentucky game, but as it turns out, he's dealt with that a little bit longer than I would have thought he probably would. Walter Grant as well. Here is Kirby kind of updating all three of those guys after UMass heading towards Tech on Saturday. Here's Kirby.
Walter's, yeah, he's had an ankle that's been ongoing, but he's practiced with it. He's played with it. He played in the game the other night with it, so he's fine. Cade, we're not sure if he'll be available this week or not. He's not going to practice today, but we hope to get him back soon, as soon as he gets cleared. And then Kendall is very doubtful.
So Kendall Baker, very doubtful, and that's an update from Kirby Smart on those three guys. Maybe a more serious situation, though, with a different Georgia player. Here's a little bit more from Kirby Smart on a couple of other injuries. Another offensive lineman, Ben Cleveland, whose recovery also, for the moment at least, in terms of being at full health, is going a little bit slow, but more significant than that, as you know, Monty Rice, who didn't play last Saturday because of the foot injury suffered during warmups. Kirby Smart updated that this week, too.
Monty is probably not going to be available this week. He's doubtful. We think that he'll get better quickly. We hope to get him back, but don't know when and don't know if it'll be this week, but he will not practice today. And then Ben is continuing along the same path. Ben's cleared to play, and he's back. He's just getting over a little ankle injury. That coupled with his leg, he's just fighting back. We hope he'll be back this week. But, I mean, he's playing. He's playing on punt team. We're just trying to get him back 100%.
I mean, I think that Georgia overall is deep enough with its offensive line that a guy like Ben Cleveland has the luxury of waiting to be at full health to get back out there and be a big part of the offensive attack for UGA. And I'll say the same thing about some of those other guys, too, Cade Mays included. But when you think about battling Alabama next Saturday, you do want all hands on deck for that. You want Mays to be healthy. Hopefully he will be. You want Ben Cleveland to be healthy. Hopefully he will be. And Georgia can line up with its best five to go after that big Alabama defensive line, because running the football and controlling that portion of the game, almost any recipe for a UGA upset will include some version of that. So best to those guys as they continue their injury recovery. On the Monty Rice front, he's also crucial against Alabama. But as Kirby Smart explains, likely not available for Georgia Tech, or at least that's the assumption we're going to make here, that Rice is not going to be able to play on Saturday. And that position that Rice plays, that interior linebacker spot, when you talk about the keys and the things you have to focus on in stopping the triple option, the inside linebacker position, among the most important positions on the field. So if there's no Rice, that is a big loss for Georgia against Georgia Tech. Here's more from Smart on that.
The middle linebacker is critical against Tech's offense. You've got to do a great job, but really both linebackers, to be honest, both linebackers have to be tremendous keyers. They've got to be able to read, react. They've got to be good tacklers. They've got to be athletic and be able to play in space.
I think one of the things that you do feel good, though, about as a Georgia fan is that obviously, a lot has been made of Georgia's preparations for the triple option and what it did last year in preparations for this, spending a little bit of practice time seemingly, I don't know if it was truly each week, but certainly a lot of weeks looking at that, getting the scout team ready to give a good look to the first team defense during actual Tech game week. Kirby Smart's just really good when it comes to preparations, and he tries to leave no loose end untied, no stone unturned. And so if you're a Georgia fan, I think overall you feel pretty good about that. Now, the challenge is, if there's no Monty Rice, the likelihood is a lot of the guys who are in there trying to make some of those solo tackles in the middle of the field are going to be young guys, maybe a lot of Adam Anderson, maybe a lot of Channing Tindall, maybe some of Quay Walker. There's certainly a possibility of that. But overall, you got to think that this week they're getting a crash course, cram study on how to stop that triple option. Really good stuff from Kirby Smart on that. We'll actually hear more from him later on in the program. Before we wrap up Around the Doghouse, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and before we hear from Mike Griffith, let me also squeeze in one more quick point here. I was watching last night, and I didn't see the selection committee show at 7 p.m., but Georgia did stay at number 5 with the committee last night. I was watching the SEC Network, though, kind of after the fact. And, you know, Jordan Rogers, who, listen, he must be doing something right, because a lot of the things that Rogers says is getting a lot of attention. Maybe it's not all positive attention, but if you look at, you know, the meteoric rises in the media, maybe positive attention is not necessary to be a rising star in that industry. Rogers took a little bit of a shot at the Georgia resume after the committee had Georgia at number 5, because there were some questions being asked of, hey, Michigan just struggled with Indiana. Should Georgia maybe, in what has been kind of a drama-free moment the last few weeks, should we have gotten some drama with Georgia leapfrogging Michigan into the number 4 spot in the rankings? And Rogers took a little bit of a shot at Georgia on that, saying how good is the win against Florida, really? How good is the win against Kentucky, really? Disparaging what Georgia did against Auburn there as well. I would invite folks to check out the By the Numbers piece I wrote last Friday at DogNation.com. From a resume standpoint, I don't think Georgia has anything to apologize for right now. Now, obviously, it all comes down to either you beat Alabama or you don't, but don't be be so quick to assume that there's really anybody else in the country, Michigan, Notre Dame, Clemson, who's got a better chance of doing that than what Georgia's going to have when it takes on Alabama next Saturday. And I would invite Jordan Rogers to check out the same thing. By the way, around the doghouse here on Wednesdays and Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They provide some great services for everybody around Dog Nation, including foundation repair, basement waterproofing, and crawl space encapsulation. They also offer a lifetime of support. So give them a call right now at 678-ESOG-NOW. The number, once again, 678-ESOG-NOW. You can have one of their qualified professional technicians come out to your home to check your crack foundation, your wet basement, your damp crawl space, whatever else. They'll take good care of you because they are the only foundation repair company with a full-time engineer on staff, and that is why Engineered Solutions of Georgia is the only company we would trust when it comes to taking care of those big things. Great to have you with us here today on the Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hope you're getting ready for a happy Thanksgiving. Let's keep our fun show going. Let's talk to Mike Griffith right now.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Mike Griffith. Great stuff he's had this week at a DogNation.com. Looking ahead to Clean Old Fashioned Hate on Saturday, and then also a little bit of a peek ahead to Alabama next week. It's a busy time around Dog Nation, and Mike, we appreciate all of your insight helping us get ready for these games. Hope you're doing well today, and hope you're getting ready to enjoy a happy Thanksgiving tomorrow. How are you?
I'm doing well, BA. Thanks.
Good to know, and it's good to have you with us. I have been kind of fascinated, not just this week and this year, but also last year as well, with the amount of detail that Kirby Smart and his coaching staff seem to go into in preparing for the triple option. It's a little bit different, say, for Georgia against Georgia Tech than it would be for Alabama against the Citadel, because they don't see that very much. They saw it against the Citadel this year. I guess it was, you know, Georgia Southern a couple of years ago. And when you don't see it very much, you don't have much of a reason to prepare for it very much, much more than the week that you play the game. But Georgia, at least right now, knows it's going to be playing Georgia Tech every single year, and so Kirby's going to spend a little bit more time working on it because he knows it's a yearly opponent. As a guy who's at practice and gets to see some of that, and a guy that gets a chance to talk to Kirby Smart each week, how interested are you and what have you made of the detailed, granular, seemingly, you know, level of preparation that Georgia seems to go into for this offense that they see and just this only game of the season?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, it's one more hurdle and one more disadvantage that Georgia has with this scheduling and when the game is. I mean, Kirby, you know, I asked him about it yesterday, and he said, yeah, if I could play Georgia Tech at the start of the season, that'd be great. And I said, well, why not then? I mean, you think about it, and here's what I mean. The team has, there's something called a 20-hour rule in college football where the players are only allowed to work on football 20 hours a week. And it's up to the coaching staff to divvy that time up wisely, you know, offense, defense, the team calisthenics, and then, you know, special teams and what periods of work. Well, because you play Georgia Tech every year, and they're an option team, you've got to designate a certain amount of that time in your practice year-round, all the way through the season, because it's the last game of the year. You've got to have a certain amount of time designated for option work, and it is different. It's not the same as other football drills. In fact, Kirby says zero carryover from anything else they do on defense. So that takes away time that Georgia has. That puts them at a disadvantage because they aren't putting the same amount of time into conventional football drills as other programs because of this option team that's not only on their schedule, but the last game of the season. So you've got to be doing this all year. And you say to yourself, well, what difference does that make? And I say, well, you know, maybe those that extra however many hours a week would have led to safety to not get looked off in the national title game on a game lose. The little things, how many times do we hear the coaches say the little things make a difference? And if somebody were to say to you, you know, Georgia's going to get to work 1 hour less a week than 95% of the other teams in college football, you'd say, that's not fair. Well, that's what's happened with the Georgia Tech game being scheduled late in the season and them being an option team right now.
Yeah, but I guess as a Georgia fan, I would come back and say in response to that, that it's not, you know, Georgia Tech's responsibility to make things easier for Georgia. If you can't recruit on par with Georgia, you might as well run a perplexing offense. And for the most part, even with the, you know, the preparations that Kirby Smart says he goes into, I think these games are still more than the, you know, often than not decided by players. And Georgia, from a talent standpoint, is, you know, expected to overwhelm Georgia Tech. So, you know, for me, I don't view it as that big of a disadvantage. I don't view it as that big of an issue. If anything, in a lot of years, Alabama against Auburn is going to be playing just a much better team. So if you gave me the choice of, if we're going to assume that it's Georgia-Alabama meeting a lot in SEC championship games in the future, I would say that Alabama's at a bigger disadvantage because it could be playing a top 10 team compared to Georgia, which is playing an orthodox team, but frankly not that good of a team.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's an SEC game for Alabama. They don't have a choice. They have to play Auburn. Georgia Tech is a non-conference game that Georgia chooses to play. And that could be Clemson in an annual series. It could be Florida State. It could be a lot of different home-and-homes. It could be Oregon. It could be Michigan. You could use that home-and-home game for a lot of great teams. But instead, you know, Georgia cares a lot about this rivalry. And it's an in-state rivalry, even though right now Vanderbilt in Tennessee has a better time slot and has been more competitive the last 2 years, this rivalry still continues to exist. My only question is, why not play it at the start of the year? Now, it's been a tradition, DA, for it to be the last game of the season, but that tradition started before you had the SEC championship game. Now, to your point, they've got to play somebody, and they would have to play another SEC team, likely. But I would tell you that it won't be Auburn, because we already know that Auburn is slotted to play Alabama the last week of the season. So it won't be Auburn or Alabama. Maybe it'd be Vanderbilt. Maybe it'd be Missouri. I don't know. But the fact that it's an option team, a team that runs an offense that is different, and I will argue with you and tell you it is the equalizer. We saw the Citadel play Alabama 10-10. It didn't matter how much talent Alabama had. They weren't overwhelmed them. And 2 years ago, Georgia had Georgia Tech beat. And Georgia Tech was able to come back and win. So I think it's a dangerous game with high risk and little reward. And I just think it's one of those things that's worth looking at.
I have been fascinated this week by the reaction from Georgia fans to Rodrigo Blankenship being snubbed as a finalist for the Groves Award. Now, Mike, I'll admit that in a given year, I couldn't tell you who the Groves Award finalists are. I don't think I could tell you any person who's ever won this award. I just don't really pay attention to the Groves Award very much. But obviously, around these parts, Blankenship's a very popular player, and Georgia fans are none too happy about that. In all your years of covering college football, have you ever seen a kicker as popular with Georgia fans as Blankenship is right about now?
I don't know if I've seen any college kicker as popular with their team as Rodrigo is. And I agree. Chip Towers did a really nice article on this and pointed out, I don't know how Blankenship got left off. You know, these committees that choose this, there's a lot of gray area. And it was a few years ago, there was a Michigan player that got splashed around for all these awards. And you wondered how, because he had like one interception, right? He certainly didn't have the numbers, but because he played at Michigan, and apparently somebody said that in some cases there were booster donations to these clubs that picked. I would hate to think that would happen with any award, but there are committees and there are touchdown clubs, and people do make donations and people can be influenced. I don't know if that's what happened with the Groza. I'm certainly not suggesting that. This award's got a wonderful reputation. But there's a problem when you leave off a contender who's legitimate and popular. Most years, if they blow the Groves Award, BA, nobody even notices. Like you said, we really don't pay enough attention to the kickers, probably not as much as we should. But when there's a popular figure like Blankenship that everyone follows, everyone knows his numbers, everybody sees the impact that Rodrigo has had, whether it's kicking off, which apparently these other finalists pale to him in this category, or whether it's making clutch field goals. There's nobody in his league. So for him to be overlooked is disappointing and alarming, and it does make you take pause and look closer and put this group that picks the award under scrutiny, as they should be.
Yeah, I think that's certainly an interesting topic to bring up. On a happier note, I was happy and continue to be happy the fact that Sam Pittman seems to be in the mix of the Broyles Award, which goes to the nation's top assistant coach. I know the Georgia offensive line is also, I guess, in the mix to be honored for an award there as well. I mean, you know, I just don't think there's It's very hard to put into words just how big Pittman's impact on this Georgia team has been. I just think that, and Georgia's got a few position coaches like this, but I don't know that anyone has come in and transformed a group that has also then led to the transformation of the program more than Pittman, who brings in these behemoth offensive linemen and finds a way to get them to work together. It's not just bringing in five-star guys, but it's making Lamont Gilliard into a better player than I think he would have been otherwise. It's getting the most out of a guy like Ben Cleveland, who did sit as in his true freshman season, then emerged last year. I mean, I'm glad to see Pittman in the mix for the Broyles Award here, because I can't imagine there are too many assistant coaches out there more deserving of recognition than Pittman is right now, because I think the proof is in the pudding with his Georgia offensive lines.
I think you're right, and I think that's a key element to Georgia being an annual championship contender. I mean, I think the offensive line is paramount to a team's success. I mean, when they don't block effectively, I mean, we saw what happened at LSU. When Georgia lost that battle in the trenches, the passing game, it was gone. The running game didn't do much. They had a good opening drive. LSU changed their defensive alignment and overwhelmed the Georgia offensive front, and 36-16. And so what's amazing about this year is all the injuries. They're on the fourth different offensive line combination. And to me, to your point, how quickly these freshmen are getting on the field. Now, Jamari Salyer is the latest to impress, actually graded out higher than many of the other players in that last game. I think he was third of the grades. We saw Trey Hill go in there at right guard, didn't seem to miss a beat. And yep. Cade Mays, what he was able to do at left tackle. And so there's no doubt that the way the recruiting is picked up, the way that offensive line is performed, it's been very impressive. Now Kirby needs to go out and hope that his defensive line coach can do the same thing there that Pittman's doing on offense. And if Georgia can do that, they will win multiple national championships.
Before you joined us today, we talked about some of these injuries that Georgia's dealing with, both for the Tech game on Saturday and then obviously the big game against Alabama the week after that. And, I don't know that Georgia's more injured than the typical team this time of year, but they certainly have some key injuries that you've got to be concerned about. Monty Rice on Saturday, the weird fluke thing that happens to him, as Kirby said, that matters against Georgia Tech, but I think it also matters a lot against Alabama, where he not be healthy enough to play there. The situation on the offensive line is also a little bit tricky to figure out here. It seems like they're just choosing to take it slow with Ben Cleveland right now, at least in terms of playing on the offensive line. I know he's played some on special teams. I think that's probably a fine decision. The Cade Mays thing, though, Mike, is weird to me, because I assume that Mays, with the sting or whatever that he suffered, I assume that was not going to be that big of a deal, and yet that seems to have lingered for a while for him. What do you make of the overall health state right now when it comes to Rice and Mays and Cleveland and some of these key guys? How big of a concern do you think that is for Georgia at the moment?
Well, I mean, it's a big concern in terms of, looking at Georgia to beat Alabama, certainly. I mean, you need your best players on the field. Georgia's lost a lot from last year, and I've said it all year, and it's an unpopular opinion, but this year's Georgia team isn't as good as last year's Georgia team. They're just not. Now, to their credit, they've had an incredible year. I think that's a tribute to Kirby Smart. I think he should be a candidate for Coach of the Year. I'm disappointed we aren't seeing him on more lists, because I think he's done a phenomenal job replacing the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, Roquan Smith, the nose tackle, John Adkins, two starting NFL running backs, the leading receiver, half the secondary, five out of the starting front seven. And here sits Georgia number five in the country with no off-field issues this year, I might add. Kirby's done an amazing job. Kirby and his staff have done an amazing job getting Georgia to this point at 10-1. Now you could say, well, Mike, we all expected it. Well, maybe you did, but maybe you shouldn't have, because Georgia supposedly didn't have any first-team All-SEC players on offense in the preseason. So if the media is going to vote that, which they did in Atlanta, nobody made first-team All-SEC on offense for Georgia July and August, BA. But now they're sitting here 10-1. So that means something had to happen. That means the coaches did a pretty doggone good job. And, but now you look at the attrition and you say, wow, not only have you had to overcome the loss of all these players, not only did you have to overcome this difficult schedule where you essentially played three straight top 10 teams and now face a cut-blocking rival, but now you're missing players, key players on your offensive line. So from the standpoint of expectation, I would hope Georgia fans would look at it and go, you know, it doesn't look like things are lining up perfect. If Georgia doesn't win, that's okay. I know fans want to win and their expectations are high, but realistically, it does lead to longer odds and more concerns for Alabama week. Now, all that said, things can change. You know, Alabama could have some key injuries against Auburn, particularly a quarterback. And, you know, the Georgia players, to a man, all say they haven't played their best game yet. And to Kirby's point, the buy-in has been incredible. These guys focus week in and week out. They've been the most focused team I think I've ever covered. And I've covered some really, really good ones. So I just think the most out of what the staff and the players have done and getting everything out of it. But at some point, the whole rivet popper theory, DA, you know, if an airplane wing loses one rivet, it's probably not going to crash, but you pop enough of them, and sooner or later there's Point Break. And you just wonder how many injuries it's going to take before maybe Georgia's not as effective as it needs to be.
Let me squeeze in one final question before we let you go. I don't believe right now Auburn is capable of giving Alabama a challenge on Saturday. I just think Auburn, after the Georgia game, may have packed in its season. I don't even know they want to be in Tuscaloosa on Saturday, to be completely honest with you. That puts Georgia in a situation where if it's playing even, you know, within two touchdowns of Tech, if it's a game that still matters in the fourth quarter, there's a chance that Georgia's expending more energy in that game than Alabama may have to against Auburn. Are you with me on that an easy win for Georgia, if you can find a way to build a comfortable, sizable lead, kind of gives it whether it be about the injury situation or just the fatigue situation, that if Georgia can get the easy win against Georgia Tech, it kind of helps keep pace with Alabama, which may be in a situation where it's playing a lot of backups in the second half because it's up by 30 points or more against Auburn? How important of a storyline do you think that might be for Georgia against Georgia Tech?
Well, from my experience, I've seen some Auburn teams that weren't expected to do much beat Alabama. And I'm certainly not saying that that's going to happen. I don't predict that. But I would disagree with you that Auburn is ready to cash in the season. This game, that rivalry means something. That is, to me, the best rivalry in college football. Having lived in that state and covered both programs and seen it as a citizen and as a beat writer, that rivalry, it's year-round and it's on. You know, you said earlier in the program that, you know, the Georgia Tech rivalry just doesn't have a lot of steam, and it doesn't. When we did those polls, you know, the Florida rivalry matters more. You know, to some people, the Tennessee rivalry matters more. To some people, the Auburn rivalry matters more. With Alabama, it's Auburn, and it's year-round, and it's a game that Auburn won last year against the eventual national champions. And let's remember, Auburn was beating Georgia for a quarter and a half here in Sanford Stadium. A pretty good Georgia team that's been playing good ball. So, I'm not saying that Auburn can win that game or will win that game, but I think that it'll be a spirited group, just like I think it'll be a spirited group coming here. I think attrition is the key. I think Georgia Tech and Auburn will go into their respective rivalries and try and beat up Georgia and Alabama as much as they can, and regardless of the scoreboard, they're going to leave some bruises. And which team can get out of it healthier? To your point, yes, the team that gets the blowout win has a huge advantage if they can get those starters out of there and stay as healthy as possible, because both Alabama and Georgia do have key injuries and to some extent we'll have slight limps going into the SEC championship game.
Hey, Mike, I hope you have a happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for spending some time with us here today. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you this weekend, and just look forward to catching back up with you again next week as we head towards the SEC championship game. It's always fun to check in with you on DogNation.com and here on Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, B.A., and tip of the cap to Prather Hudson for bringing a little humor to this week. I don't know if you saw that story, but it's hard not to get tickled by that, what that young guy did on Twitter.
Yeah, I agree with that too, Mike. That's well said. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
For those of you who are not aware, what Mike references there at the end, Prather Hudson, the Georgia running back, along with the UMass player, they're the two that collided with Laura Rutledge, the sideline reporter from the SEC Network, on Saturday as she was getting ready to do a on-field hit. and she got hit, and it was a big collision. Listen, I've done a little sideline work in my day. I've been hit like that, maybe not quite as hard as she's been hit. You see it right there if you're watching a video anyway. I don't know if I've been hit quite that hard, but I've been hit on the sideline. It hurts. And she bounced right back up, and what was funny is you also see Uga kind of having some fun at her expense, too, during the SEC Nation show that morning. But Prather Hudson, the Georgia running back, tweets at her and says, "Sorry for knocking you down, but I can pick you up at 7. It was a funny line, kind of jokingly suggesting that he would take her on a date. She's married, but she had a funny back to him, basically just a laughing emoji. So she had a good sense of humor about the whole thing. And it was kind of a nice thing to see this week. Good job by Hudson, just kind of encapsulating the moment perfect in a tweet. It goes viral. It was really funny, and Laura Rutledge had some fun with it too, so it was kind of nice to see. One more thing let me mention off of what Mike Griffith said before we roll along with our SEC through, and we'll do our My Bookie Best Bets today since we won't be here tomorrow. I think that Mike actually brings up a pretty good point about Kirby Smart and the SEC Coach of the Year. And I know that, you know, the host of Dog Nation Daily, you know, obviously it would be what I would be expected to say, that Kirby Smart ought to be SEC Coach of the Year. And I'm not necessarily saying that he should win the award, but the fact that he doesn't get more consideration, because I've watched some of these TV shows and online forums where this kind of stuff gets debated, and Smart's name doesn't come up. You know, Mark Stoops' name was coming up earlier in the year. Jeremy Pruitt's name was coming up before the blowout loss to Missouri on Saturday. You know, you've had a lot of different names kind of kicked around here. I hear Dan Mullen's name being mentioned. It's almost like Kirby Smart, much like Nick Saban's, no longer eligible for this award. I mean, I don't know for a fact, but I'm guessing it's been a long time since Nick Saban's probably won SEC Coach of the Year. It seems like Bill Belichick, you know, Greg Popovich, these great coaches in sports that once they achieve a certain level of status, they're kind of no longer eligible for the award. At least that's the way that it seems. It seems like if you've already moved Kirby Smart into that group because of how talented his roster is, I think you've done that awful fast. And I do think Mike, when he says, people forget that at the beginning of the year, Georgia was thought to have a lot of holes from departed stars from a year ago that were going to be difficult to, voids are going to be difficult to fill. So I think Mike's actually making a pretty good point on that. With that said, let's do our SEC through here, and of course we'll do our MyBookie Best Bets. And speaking of MyBookie, I know a lot of you have always kind of wanted to get a bet down, but you're kind of afraid you'd pick the wrong side, which I completely understand. That's why MyBookie's got a kind of a cool thing going on for a Thanksgiving. This Thanksgiving, it's finally possible for you to get a 100% refund on your bet if you lose it. Now, how much fun is that? It's the Turkey Day Free Play. This is such a cool, a fun idea from MyBookie. Turkey Day Free Play, you can bet the spread on either the Bears or the Lions. If it wins, you win. If it loses, MyBookie is going to give you your money back up to $250. You literally cannot lose. It is no risk, all gravy. And around this time of year, when it comes to Thanksgiving, how much fun is that? So check out MyBookie online. Type in MyBookie. That's how you find them online. And then use the promo code DogNation. You can also get a 50% deposit to jumpstart your bankroll when you sign up for the first time there. So find MyBookie online. Use the promo code DogNation. And this week, it's also the Turkey Day Free Play. Get in on the action with the Bears and the Lions. You literally cannot lose. I think it's a lot of fun for some folks who maybe want to get away from their family a little bit on Thanksgiving, kind of dive into a NFL game. And listen, you got a Turkey Day Free Play. Who wouldn't like that? All right, with that said, let me go kind of quick here with some of these SEC games for the weekend. I am, for the most part, grasping at straws on most of this. Mississippi State is 10.5-point favorite at Ole Miss. That's a Thanksgiving night, by the way. I actually do like the favorite here. Give me the Bulldogs as a MyBookie best bet. Just overall better team. I think Joe Moorhead wants this game in his first year. They lost last year. There's extra motivation because of that. I'm going to take a little bit of a stab at the dark and take Mississippi State as a MyBookie best bet. Arkansas at Missouri's on Friday. Missouri is a gigantic 23-point favorite. They just blew out Tennessee. This, for me, is a total stay away. I don't have a lot of confidence that Missouri covers this number. Arkansas is obviously terrible, but, you know, Missouri doing it 2 weeks in a row to the tune of a really big score and a really dominant win, I don't feel good about that one way or another. That's a Friday game. That's a stay away from me. I do love Florida State, though. Florida State is a 5.5-point underdog right now. Believe it or not, even though Florida's been good, Florida State's been terrible this season, this number actually opened at 3. So I think my bookie right there trying to tell you that, hey, maybe Florida's not quite as good as you think. Florida State maybe a little bit better than you realize. I would go with the experts on this one. Give me the Seminoles plus the 5.5 here to maybe make a Dan Mullen's regular season finale not what he wants it to be. Miriam Martin Corbin told me earlier I was wrong on Facebook about the Auburn-Alabama game. She thinks Auburn can keep this one close. I don't know. For the most part, I'm staying away from this one as well. I won't make either of these two teams on my bookie best bet, but I have a sneaking suspicion that Auburn has packed it in on the season. Tennessee at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, believe it or not, at home is a 3.5-point favorite here. I think this may be a game in which Tennessee does find a way to get bowl eligible. I don't think there's a lot of teams in the past that have game planned for Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt hasn't seen that much. Tennessee just needs this game. Pruitt, I think, motivated by that, goes out and gets the win. Certainly covers the number. Give me the Vols as my bookie best bet. South Carolina, Clemson, for the most part, to stay away from me, but if I had to pick a side here, I'd go Clemson. South Carolina has just ended up being really disappointing. I think that Kentucky at Louisville is a 17-point favorite. That may be too many points for the Wildcats. I'd probably stay away from that game, all things considered. If I had to pick a side, I'd take Kentucky. 17 is a lot of points, though, for a Kentucky team that hasn't been quite as good over the last couple of weeks. I will make a strong play, though, on LSU at Texas A&M. Give me A&M here as the 2-point favorite at home against LSU. I think that this may be a scenario in which LSU, in its offensive struggles, despite what it did against Georgia, has struggled a little bit offensively. This may be a game in which that comes to haunt them just a bit. Give me A&M to go out in style here, at least in terms of the regular season, minus the two. I'll take A&M as my bookie best bet. We'll make that your SEC throw. I also want to let you hear from Georgia coach Kirby Smart one more time before we're done today. Before that, though, you know, we enjoy celebrating the work that Georgia does on the athletic fields here on Dog Nation Daily, but we also enjoy the great work done in the classroom and the tremendous reputation that UGA has around the country, and we obviously like to take some time to celebrate that here as well. For instance, did you know that more than 145,000 donors have contributed to the Commit to Georgia campaign? UGA is endlessly grateful to be supported by so many passionate, cause-driven alumni and friends who commit each and every day to improving our state, nation, and our world. And we're indebted to those who recognize the importance of public higher education and the impact it can have on the communities across the globe. Our donors are helping talented students push boundaries, take risk, and follow their passions. And they're funding critical research that will improve lives and create leaders tomorrow. Their generosity truly knows no bounds. So the UGA Alumni Association wants to say thank you to all the donors out there who've certainly made this a great, great year for the UGA Alumni Association. And if you want to read more about what's going on in terms of the money that's been raised and the way that it supports the University of Georgia, go check out this website. It's give.uga.edu/recognition. Once again, give.uga.edu/recognition. We appreciate being able to tell those stories here on Dog Nation Daily. All right, let's turn our attention back to Georgia versus Georgia Tech on Saturday. And I thought Kirby Smart said something really interesting this week that, you know, he was asked about a lot of these young players playing against Tech for the first time, especially defensively, stopping that triple option. How do you coach them up? How do you get them ready? And Kirby Smart was very candid with his answer. Here's more from Smart.
A lot of coaching points. You got 2 or 3 hours. You can't just define them in a few words. Eye control, discipline, toughness, tackling, it's limitless. So you've got to be disciplined. You got to do your job, and you got to key things the right way. And if you don't, they expose you. Paul does a tremendous job of seeing when people are out of place or seeing when people don't do things the right way. And he exposes you at it. He's done it for a long time.
Yeah, so listen, I think that when you think about a Georgia fan and why he or she would feel confident going into this game on Saturday, I think one of the things that comes to mind is, even with the better players and even with the better program reputation, with a lot more to play for in the weeks ahead, I think a lesser coach, lesser team might be guilty of overlooking Georgia Tech and assuming that as a 17-point favorite, even if the game's a little sloppy and a little ugly, it ought to probably still end up being a Georgia win. With Kirby Smart, that's just not how he rolls. He is buttoned up, and he is plugged in, and he is, you know, laser focused on the task at hand. And so whether it be new players, young guys in the mix the first time, my guess is this week they're getting a heavy dose of what to expect. And I think that Georgia fans feel confident that the Dogs will be well prepared come Saturday between the hedges. after all, I mean, let's not forget here, Tech has won the last two in Athens. So that's a streak that Georgia's looking to end on Saturday. We'll look forward to seeing them do that. By the way, that's not the only rivalry game we care about here around Dog Nation Daily. On our program presented by Marco's Pizza, we also like to remind Dog fans that good UGA fans are Gator haters. And, of course, Georgia fans who are Gator haters have had a lot to celebrate as of late, because it's now been 753 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. We love watching that number climb right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We appreciate all of you being here as a part of that. And speaking of that, let me close out this day that way. You know, it is a tremendous privilege to be able to speak to you and do a Dog Nation Daily each and every day. And I'm incredibly grateful to all of you who come here and be a part of this with us. Your comments, or just the fact that you watch and listen. It's a lot of fun to be able to talk about this subject with all of you, and I hope you all have a very happy Thanksgiving.